Connor Trebor joins me this week to discuss seasonal beer styles. This is Beersmith Podcast number 180.
This is the Beersmith Home Brewing Show, where brewing great beer is our passion. If you want to take your brewing to the next level, visit beersmith.com, where you can download a trial version of our Beersmith software, subscribe to the newsletter, and get dozens of free articles on home brewing. And now, your host and the author of Home Brewing with Beersmith, Brad Smith.
This is Beersmith Podcast number 180, and it's late October 2018. This week, Connor Trebor joins me to discuss two seasonal beer styles. Thank you to this week's sponsors, Craft Beer and Brewing Magazine. They have a new Craft Beer and Brewing Magazine podcast, which I encourage you to check out. It features some of the top craft brewery owners and brewmasters discussing brewing techniques and flavors in beer. It's a podcast for those who make and drink great beer. You can find it on iTunes or at the beerandbrewing.com/podcasts website. And also the Riptide Pump from Blickman Engineering. Designed for homebrewers, this pump features a whisper quiet, sealed housing, removable tri-clamp stainless steel head that's easy to clean, and a built-in relief valve for easy priming. It also has the integral Blickman linear valve for precise flow control. Get the Riptide Pump today, another great innovation from BlickmanEngineering.com. Again, that's BlickmanEngineering.com. And finally, Beersmith 3 is now available for mobile and desktop. Beersmith 3 adds mead, wine, and cider recipe support along with the Beersmith platform, along with integrated water profile and mash pH tools for beer brewing. Dozens of new features, including cloud folders, updated databases, support for fruit, juice, honey, as well as new Whirlpool hop options. Download your free 21-day trial today from beersmith.com. And now let's jump into this week's episode. Today on the show, I welcome Connor Trebor. Connor is CEO at SensorShare LLC, makers of the BrewPerfect digital hydrometer, and he's also an avid homebrewer. Connor joins us to discuss seasonal beer styles this fall, including pumpkin and winter beers. Connor, it's great to have you as a first-time guest on the show.
Thanks so much, Brad. Yeah, thanks for having me on. It's exciting to be here talking with you.
So you wanted to discuss brewing seasonal beers. Can you talk a little bit about what some of the seasonal beers are? I know we're only going to cover a couple of them today, but maybe some of the different styles.
Yeah, absolutely. So, the big one coming up this fall, pumpkin. Pumpkin was huge last year. Pumpkin's going to be big again this year, I think. And then moving later into the holidays, Thanksgiving, Christmas, gets a lot different from there. You know, brews get bigger, heavier, a lot more spices in it. So. Wide variety.
Yep. I enjoy some of the holiday beers. I'm not a pumpkin fan, though, so this will be new to me. I haven't brewed with pumpkin.
We're good.
So let's start with pumpkin beer, though. They're in season now. I can get pumpkins all over the place. I was at Home Depot today. They had pumpkins stacked up outside. There's several variants, including, I think, pumpkin ale. You can make pumpkin porters, pumpkin stouts. What are the basic elements of a great pumpkin beer?
Great question. So I'm a fan of simpler is better when we're talking about pumpkin beer. So I like to start with a good pale ale or American ale recipe and then kind of amend it as you go on, adding your pumpkin and spices, things from there. You can get into the porters and stout, get a bigger beer as it's getting colder outside. But for me, I like to start simple, really, really simple, and then add in your pumpkins and spices.
So, I mean, like, what's a good base recipe for a pumpkin? You start with like a generic, English ale, pale ale, American ale. Yeah.
American ale is perfect. American ale. So if you get a really simple, a really basic, traditional American ale recipe, that'll be perfect. It'll give you some good, bread, malts, and with seasonal beers, and especially with pumpkin beers, hops really start to take a back seat. So a lot of those American ales have that already in the recipe.
So do you go with something like a medium gravity, 1050 something maybe?
Yeah, exactly. So it's going to get a little bit heavier. That gravity is going to start to creep up as you add in your spices, as you add in your pumpkin. Some of those fermentables or sugars are going to bump that up a little bit, but that's a great place to start.
So how do you go about balancing the pumpkin with the other flavors in the beer?
Great question. So it's a little bit of trial and error to start. Always remember that you can add in more spices later, but it's really difficult to take them out. And so you add in your pumpkin in your, and then add in spices in your boil. Even when you go from primary to secondary fermentation, you can taste it there and add in some more spices for secondary, depending on what kind of flavor profile you want as a brewer.
Well, let's focus on the pumpkin for a minute. What kind of pumpkin should you use? Can I use the pumpkin I get at Home Depot or at the grocery store?
Yeah, wouldn't recommend it. So the ones at Home Depot, if you go out to the pumpkin patch, you know, your typical jack-o'-lantern, if you will, pumpkins, aren't going to have a lot of flavor, a lot of fermentables in there. They don't have a ton of flesh to begin with. So I would go with something more like what you're going to make a pumpkin pie with. So pie pumpkins or Cinderella pumpkins or crooked neck pumpkins will have a lot more flesh in there, a little bit sweeter, have some more sugars in there, and are going to turn out a much better pumpkin flavor in the beer.
And if it's out of season, can you use pumpkin filling or something like that?
Yeah, you can. You can. So if you have access to the fresh pumpkins, I would definitely go that route. Otherwise, you can go and get canned pumpkins. I would recommend reading the back, reading that label, reading the ingredients, and try to find one that has as little extra ingredients, if you will, as possible. So anything that has additives, preservatives, try to stay away from that. Get a good canned pumpkin that just has fresh pumpkin in there, and that will be your best end result in the beer.
So starting with a fresh pumpkin, how do I actually cut it up and prepare and use it in my brewing session?
Yeah, good question. So you're going to want to cook it and mash it up. And so what I would do, again, with like a crooked neck pumpkin, just cut it in half, maybe even chunk it up a little bit, and then put it just on a pan, put it in the oven at, you know, 350, 375 for an hour and a half or a couple hours, and really soften it up, and then just scoop the meat off of there and mash it up, get a good mashed or pureed pumpkin.
That sounds pretty high. 375 for a couple hours would cook it pretty thoroughly, I would think.
Yeah,
right?
Yeah, absolutely. You want it really, really soft so you can work with it easily. You can cook it for less, but it's going to be a little bit harder time to make it into that real mash or puree that you want to have as you go to brew.
So do you actually mash it up at that point? It's going to be pretty soft, obviously, but do you actually mash it up at that point?
Yep. So mash it up, create, again, kind of a puree or a goop, if you will, of the pumpkin. And that's what you're going to want to go and brew with.
And then, at what point do I actually add it in the beer making? Is it something I add in the secondary? Is it something I add in the boil?
Great question. That is the million-dollar question. A lot of different brewers have a lot of different opinions on it. You know, you can add it in the mash. You can add it in the boil. You can add it in secondary. What I would say, add it in the boil. If you do add it in the mash, if you're doing all grain, you can add it in the mash. You're going to get a few more points on gravity, but you're not going to get a lot of the sugars or a lot of the flavor, a lot of the color, or flavor and color, I mean, out of that. But you will get a few more gravity points out of it.
Interesting. I'd be concerned about adding in the mash. You'd probably gum it up because the stuff is pretty gummy to work with, right?
Yes, absolutely. If you add in mash, keep in mind that is going to gum up. It's going to gelatize a little bit. So, you know, a few handfuls of rice hulls always helps. As you're mashing out, do it a little slower than normal, even a little warmer than normal, to make sure it kind of stays light and doesn't gum up. So, yeah, that's another advantage to doing it in the boil.
And I would assume that most of the sugars are converted anyways when you've already cooked it, right? When you cooked it down
right.
In the oven, I assume that most of the sugars have been broken down in a simple form, right?
Yeah, it really breaks down in the oven well. Again, that's an advantage of keeping it in the oven for a little bit. The sugars break down, create those simple sugars that are really going to work well as fermentables once you go to ferment.
Now, would there be a downside to putting it in the secondary or even in the primary fermenter as opposed to the boil?
Well, you won't get as much, I don't think, of the color, and maybe not as much of the flavor if you put it in there versus if you boil it with it. In the boil, it's really going to pull out a lot of that pumpkin flavor. It's going to pull out a lot of that color. You may get a little bit more of a cloudy beer, a little hazier beer, but I think in these seasonals, that's okay.
I'm just thinking of how I use other fruits, and I've gone to moving almost all my fruits into the primary or secondary now, you know?
Yeah, absolutely. There are a lot of fruits that, you really don't want to touch before you go to ferment. So you want to rack it over those fruits or even, you're exactly right, put them in the secondary.
Now, I understand if you put it in the boil, it can still cause quite a bit of a mess and clogging. How do you sort of constrain it?
Yeah, good question. So, putting it in a bag won't really work unless it's a really, really fine mesh because, again, at this point, it's kind of a goop or a puree. It's just like your other heavier pieces as you go into the boil. You're really just going to have to let it settle a little bit and then kind of suction off over that is what I do.
So do you lose a lot of work because of that or not?
Not a ton. You do have to keep in mind that you are going to lose some because of having the pumpkin. It's going to settle. It's going to be down there. So you may not be able to get all of it or just be okay with having a little bit of that transfer. But I would keep in mind that you are going to lose a little bit more because of that.
And if you're working with pumps and tubes, do you have to worry about getting those clogged up as well?
A little bit. Yeah. Yeah. If you're working with the pumps, especially, just keep in mind that that's a worry and be able to account for that where you may not get all of it or you may have to, stop and clean out and start over.
So once we've gone through this process, though, we're going to basically then ferment the beer out just as we normally would, right? Except obviously the pumpkin's going to add some gravity and I would assume probably is actually going to thin the beer a little bit, right?
Yeah, exactly right. As with any spices you put in there, that's going to definitely affect and especially as you, fight flavor with flavor, if you will, as you're balancing those spices with the pumpkin, you have to keep in mind, what is that going to do to your gravity? What's going to do that to exactly how thick or thin that beer turns out to be?
Well, I'm just thinking pumpkin is probably like most fruits. It mostly ferments away. I'm sure to leave some flavor, but it mostly ferments away because it's mostly simple sugars. So it's gonna ferment out. Is there any planning you have to do up front? What portion of the grain bill, for example, would the pumpkin make up? Is it 10%? Is it 20%?
Yeah, in terms of how much pumpkin to put in, it really depends on how bold of a pumpkin flavor you want. And so, if you really want a really strong pumpkin flavor, you can put in, about a pound per gallon, which again adds a lot to that total mash bill. If you are wanting a lower pumpkin flavor, you can do 3/4 of a pound, 2/3 of a pound per gallon, much less than 1/2 pound per gallon. You're really going to start to lose that pumpkin flavor and those spices are going to take over more and more.
So, I mean, that's quite a bit, actually. You talk about 1 pound per gallon. That's, a 5 gallon or a 19 liter batch. That's 5 pounds, almost 2 kilo, a little over 2 kilograms. It's quite a bit of pumpkin, right?
Yeah, it's a lot of pumpkin if you want that strong pumpkin flavor. Again, and in the boil, a lot of that's going to, boil up and a lot of that's going to stay down and stick in your beer. You really, with that much pumpkin, you're going to get a good pumpkin flavor and a great color out of it as well.
Well, let's talk about the other elements of the beer here. What kind of specialty grains go well with it? Are there any particular hop varieties that might go well with it? Do you use a particular yeast variety that you like?
Yeah, good question. So a lot of it, again, goes back to whatever just traditional American ale recipe you start with. So hops, again, take a little bit of a backseat, but, the Magnum, the Willamette, some of the Northern Brewer hops will work well here. You're going for a lower IBU, pointing around 20 or so. In terms of malt, again, go back to your American ale, traditional American ale. You can use, some light Munich hops, or if you want to get into some specialty stuff, you can. But again, I think these ingredients start to take a back seat when you're doing something like a pumpkin ale.
Okay, so basically just like you would for regular ale. And then are you shooting for a high attenuation yeast, like a California ale yeast or something a little more flavorful?
Depends on what you want your end product to be like. You know, if you do that, you have to balance that with how much sugars are going to be in your starting product. And so it really, you know, if you want a nice, simple, like your American ale, do whatever yeast you have in there. But yeah, you can absolutely go a little higher attenuation and pull those results out into this beer as well.
Okay, so we're going to go through the regular brewing process from then on and ferment it out, I assume. And then are you one that adds the spices at the end, or do you use them, do them partway through fermentation? What do you prefer?
So I would do a little bit here and there. And the reason is because you can, again, once you're going from primary to secondary, you can really taste it. And see, okay, I don't see, or even on the nose, see, I don't smell any of the cinnamon, any of the nutmeg, any of those things I wanted to have a little bit stronger in there and add more at that point. And then again, at the end, add a little bit more if you want more of those bold flavors.
Are you adding primarily seasonal spices? I didn't even ask you which spices to use. You mentioned nutmeg, cinnamon, some of the more traditional, I assume allspice probably.
Yeah. Absolutely. So cinnamon, nutmeg, ginger, even a little bit of vanilla on these pumpkin ales is perfect. On these fall seasonal beers, those are really the spices that I go for. Those are the flavors I like. And so that's where I tend to put in these, you know, fall seasonal beers, especially the pumpkin ale.
Yeah. One trick I use is sometimes I'll actually, if I'm making a spice beer, I'll add the spices at the very end and do it with a small sample so that I can scale it up and kind of get it in the right range.
Yeah, absolutely. And you can even section that off a little bit and put different spices in different parts of the beer so you can taste. And like I said, it's a lot trial and error, kind of starting with these fall seasonals and this pumpkin ale in terms of what flavors do you want as a brewer, and just your palate, what do you want to be stronger? Do you want a stronger cinnamon flavor? Do you want a stronger nutmeg flavor? Do you really just want it to be a pumpkin beer and have all these spices, you know, support that? Some brewers even go for like a pumpkin pie flavor beer and do very, very little pumpkin and get all of the flavor or almost all of the flavor from those spices.
Interesting. Have you done anything with porters and stouts? I know pumpkin flavored porters and stouts are very popular as well.
Yeah, not as much with those. When we get into porters and stouts, I tend to do, you know, the oatmeal and the bourbon barrel and those type things. When I'm doing a pumpkin, I like to have it personally. I like to have it a lot lighter. And so I do kind of a based off an ale recipe.
Okay. Any other advice on pumpkin beer?
Again, goes back to what the brewer wants. You know, keep in mind how you're going to want to drink this beer. Is it going to be with meals? Is it going to be, you know, in the afternoons or in the evenings around the bonfire? And what flavors are going to come out more, and what are you going to enjoy more in those circumstances?
Nice. Well, let's talk about the second topic we want to talk about today, which is holiday ales, somewhat related. They're typically spiced ales, typically a little bit stronger, usually brewed for the Christmas season. So, you know, if you started one now, it would probably come out really nice. Can you go into that particular style and talk a little bit about what it is?
Yeah, absolutely. So not too dissimilar here, actually. So you're going to want to start with something stronger. The big things, the big flavors you're going to see are, you know, even some almond, cranberry, hazelnut. The spices aren't going to be too dissimilar. And you're definitely going to want to start with kind of a heavier recipe for these, you know, winter warmers, if you will.
So what kind of starting gravity are we talking about for these?
So these are much higher. These are, you know, what your typical Belgian strong ale would be, what your, you know, let's see, your brown ales, your amber ales. Once you get into those darker, kind of heavier starting recipes, that's where you're looking to as a base recipe.
And I assume they're designed around the flavors of the season. So we're talking about things, you know, not only the cinnamon and so on, but we're probably talking about like nutmeg and other holiday flavors, right?
Yeah, exactly right.
Anise and stuff like that, right?
Yep, Yep, exactly right. So you're looking at some again, nutmeg and cinnamon are going to carry over. You're going to look for some allspice now. You're going to look for even some...
I'm thinking of anise, which is like a licorice flavor, black licorice flavor.
Yep, exactly right.
Okay, well, let's start with a starting recipe. What kind of a base recipe do you use for a holiday ale?
Again, a good brown ale or a Belgian strong ale is perfect. So something that's a little bit more less just bready, more really roasted, or even some caramel malt or something like that will give you a great base to start with. As you go into a winter warmer or as it's getting colder outside, one of those heavier winter beers.
And do you add any seasonal fruits? You mentioned cranberries, I think.
Yeah, cranberries. And like you mentioned about putting fruit in secondary, cranberries is really one, or not until you start fermenting. Cranberries is really one that you don't want to mess around with too much until you go to ferment. And so, you know, racking over some cranberries is, you get a lot more flavor out of them that way.
Yeah, I've done some work with cranberries. They do make a delicious beer, actually, but they have a nice, because they have a lot of acidity and tartness to them.
Right.
The only thing I found, though, is sometimes months down the road, it'll actually fade. So there actually is a window, sort of, where they kind of hit an optimal flavor. Yeah. Are there any other seasonal fruits you might use, for example?
Yeah, you could. You could even do something like... blueberries, you get more in the summer there, but cranberries are really the big one. And you mentioned about cranberries, I want to touch on, you are going to get some tannins. So it's going to be really tart and dry out of that cranberries. And so keep in mind when you're brewing, how you want to balance those out. So do you want to put even some brown sugar in there? And which is, again, something you can add to a pumpkin recipe as well. Some honey in there, something that's going to balance out that tartness later on.
Yeah, I would personally, if I was making a cranberry ale, I'd probably make sure I had some residual sweetness in the beer. And it's hard to do that in some ways, because some of the things you mentioned, like honey and brown sugar, they tend to ferment out almost clean.
Right.
But you can use, tricks like using maybe an English ale yeast that is going to finish with a higher gravity, which will leave some sweetness to balance it out. Because they are they're highly acidic. They're
right.
I think they're like a pH of two something. We talked a little bit about spices. How do you pick the spices? What are the right amounts of spices to use? How do you complement the flavor of the beer?
Yeah. Here I would go back to what I was saying about a pumpkin beer as well. You know, it's about what you as a brewer and as someone who's going to enjoy it wants to taste in there. And also how you're going to balance it out with, for instance, say cranberries. What flavors are you going to want with the cranberries? Are you going to want rosemary? Do you want to boil in some rosemary? Do you want to do some rosemary in the fermentation? Do you want to do some cloves, some spice? And again, it's a little bit trial and error, and it's a little bit too the brewer's taste. It's very easy with the concentrated spices to have those overpowered. So again, keep in mind, really easy to add them in later, even when you're done. Really difficult to take those out in the end.
Yeah, that's where, again, I recommend, I like to finish the beer and then make like a spice tea with some of the spices I'm playing with, and then get a small sample and work with that. And scale it up, because then you can usually hit your desired flavor right on the target, I think.
Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely. Just know what those spices, what those spices taste like. Again, like a spice tea or something. And how is that going to act with the not only other spices you're putting in there, but your main ingredient, if that's pumpkin, if that's cranberry. How is that going to react, and how is that going to taste with those?
And do you have tips on finishing or serving the beer? Obviously, it's a higher gravity ale. We probably need to give it a little more time, right?
Yeah, give it time. Give it time. With any of these seasonals, with any of these, stronger fruit flavors you're doing with the pumpkin, with the cranberry, it's not a race. Definitely take your time. Let it ferment out. And in terms of serving, keep in mind how you're going to serve it. So with these holiday ales or even the pumpkin ale, but a lot of the holiday ales, you're going to serve it at Christmas time, at Thanksgiving time, keep in mind a lot of the things you're eating are going to be really, really rich and sweet. And so you're going to have, you know, the turkey, the mashed potatoes, the cranberry sauce, the stuffing, you know, those things are going to very, very sweet and really rich. So keep in mind how the flavors you're putting in your beer is going to react with those as well. You know, there's going to be a lot of cinnamon in other things and so that you're eating. And so a little bit of cinnamon may not really come out too much in the finished product if you're already eating a lot of that. A little bit of tartness, however, may go a really long way.
Do you have any final words on talk about with the seasonal beers, particularly the holiday ale?
Yeah, I would just say, again, remember the elements in it. Remember what you're going to be serving it with. Guess and check, you know, trial and error, and try to find a good balance. If you want a strong pumpkin flavor, if you want a good spice flavor, you know, whatever you want as a brewer, whatever flavors you want, keep that in mind all throughout the process and where and when you add in those ingredients.
Okay. We wanted to talk for a minute about some of the things you're doing with Brew Perfect, and I'll pop up the website here. So you took over, I think, this company a short time ago, right?
Yeah, exactly. So we kind of started this company out of an old hydrometer company, went out of business a couple of years ago. We bought it up and kind of relaunched it as Brew Perfect. And so that's begin your new brewing experience today. We really want to give people a new experience in brewing.
And your primary product, I think, is a digital hydrometer, right?
That's right. That's right. So
there it is.
There. There it is. It's a Wi-Fi enabled.
Did you buy the? Was it the Beer Bug? I'm trying to remember.
Yeah,
I'm sorry.
Yeah, that's exactly right.
Okay.
Yeah, that's exactly right. So we bought up the Beer Bug and relaunched it under Brew Perfect. Redesigned the product from the bottom up. So you know, took all the great things of Beer Bug and kept them and the concept and took all the things that could use some work. And built a new platform around that.
And I understand you're working on some new products as well that are related to that, right?
We are. So we're kind of exploring and talking to brewers right now and trying to figure out what's going to really enhance the brewing experience. So is it the ability to, track your beer from anywhere in the world, but adjust your beer wherever you are. So if you can't be right next to your fermenter, how can you adjust and control what's going on in there from, you know, remotely?
Interesting. So tell us a bit about what Brew Perfect does, I guess, real quick, the one you have now.
Absolutely. So the digital hydrometer, as you see there, that sits anywhere a typical airlock will in the top of your fermenter. That acrylic torpedo you see hanging down sits down fully submerged in your beer. And then the black console you see kind of connects to your home Wi-Fi and sends real-time specific gravity, temperature, and ABV readings into the cloud. And so from wherever you are in the world, you can access that and see, okay, what's my beer doing? Did the yeast kick off like I wanted it to and like I thought it would?
So do those go to a server somewhere or your web or your computer or a phone? How does that work?
Yeah, that's exactly right. So it's all cloud-based. So it goes up to our servers, and then from anywhere the user is in the world, they can go onto our website, like you see there, or our Brew Perfect app and access their beer.
So it currently tracks gravity, right? And I think you're looking at adding temperature maybe in the future?
Yeah, so currently it tracks gravity and temperature. It's ambient temperature. We also sell a temperature probe that you can hook in there, put it down in the thermal well, and it'll track your beer exactly, you know, your exact beer temperature down to a tenth of a degree.
Oh, nice. So you can take it and put it in your, nice fermenter or whatever, put it in the thermal well and track it, right?
Yep, that's exactly right. So you have that accurate data.
Cool. And I think you had an announcement of some kind, I think you wanted to talk about.
Yeah, so we're working on a few things coming down the line that we could be announcing soon. Not quite ready yet, but that it's some exciting things coming down the line that's going to work in conjunction with our digital hydrometer that we really think is going to give the home brewer a lot more control than they've ever had before.
And if folks want to learn a little bit more, they can go to your website, which is?
Yeah, that's the best place. So brewperfect.com, all of our info is on there. If you have any questions or anything, feel free to email us at info@brewperfect.com. We'd be happy to hear from any brewers.
Okay, Connor. Well, thanks again for coming on the show. Really appreciate you being here.
Absolutely. Thank you, Brad. It's great to be here and talk to you and the Beersmith users out there. And we're looking forward to spending some more time on here with you in the future.
And again, today my guest was Connor Trebor. He is CEO of SensorShare LLC, makers of the BrewPerfect digital hydrometer, and also an avid brewer. Thanks again, Connor.
Thanks so much, Brad. Have a good one.
Well, a big thank you to Connor Trebor for joining me this week. Thank you to this week's sponsors, Craft Beer and Brewing Magazine. They have a new Craft Beer and Brewing Magazine podcast, which I encourage you to check out. It features some of the top craft brewery owners and brewmasters discussing brewing techniques and flavors in beer. It's the podcast for those who make and drink great beer. You can find it on iTunes or at beerandbrewing.com/podcasts. And also Blickman Engineering, creators of the Riptide Pump. Designed for homebrewers, this pump features a whisper quiet sealed housing, a removable tri-clamp stainless steel head that's easy to clean, and a built-in relief valve for easy priming. Get the Riptide Pump today, another great innovation from BlickmanEngineering.com. And Beersmith 3 is available for download on both desktop and mobile platforms. Beersmith 3 adds mead, wine, and cider support, along with a number of great beer options, support for high-altitude brewing, and a whole lot more. Check out Beersmith 3 and get your free 21-day trial today from beersmith.com. Thank you for listening. I hope you have a great brewing week.